So we have 15 minutes this afternoon, continuing the conversation that we started this morning on gender in the CRPs. So we have three people who have kindly agreed to take, that you really have no seat, but I say the hot seat. Let me introduce the man on the panel, Dr. Patrick Dugan, who is the director of the CRP on Aquatic Agricultural Systems and the Deputy Director General of World Fish. We have Kathy Culverson, who leads the gender research program and a number of other things in ILRI and the livestock and fish program. So two slightly fishy CRPs here. And then we have Alessandra, who's relatively new in ILRI. She's been 6 months in ILRI and is a gender research scientist. So we just have 15 minutes, so we'll keep this pretty quick, rapid fire. That's why we've asked you to stand, so you don't, you know, going to, yeah. Jackie ended on the note saying, look, CRPs are investing 10% of their budgets on gender. Patrick, in AAS, you are investing 20% of your core funds, window one, window two, on gender. Is that good value for money? How do you justify that investment?
Well, we think it's good value for money, and it goes back to the little cartoon of Einstein this morning, because we're fundamentally committed to the fact that we actually think we do need to see change in the way in which the CG does business in order to be able to have the impact on, or contribute to having the impact on rural poverty that we were highlighting this morning. In order to do that, we see gender as being at the core of the issue, and so we're making the investments to do that. 20% sounds like a lot, but that 20% goes into two broad areas. It goes into more conventional mainstreaming, making sure that the technologies we develop are gender sensitive, and then it goes into the gender transformative approaches that we're pursuing, which are engaging much more with the equity issue. And is it value for money? We think it's what's needed at this stage to actually bring on the capacities that are required to form the partnerships that are required to take this forward. And so far, all the indicators are positive, but we still got a long way to go.
Okay, I'll pick up on that issue that you mentioned about transformative approaches. This morning, we heard somebody comment that, hey, does CG have the comparative advantage to deal with issues like empowerment? Yeah, do we have the capacity to do it? And so what do you think about that? And transformative approaches are all about addressing social norms and inequalities. Yeah? And can you give us an example of what that would look like if you actually managed to get it to a transformative change?
It's really important when we think about issues such as empowerment, transformative change, that we are looking at the CRPs to be working in partnerships with development partners right across the board. So what that means is that we are pursuing a research agenda that has to understand the importance of power, the importance of equity, the relationship between that and technology and other areas of agriculture and investment, the relationship between that and its impact on rural poverty. That doesn't mean that we as the CGIR going to be sort of storming the barricades and playing the more activist empowerment role, but what we do need to do is to understand the place of that in rural poverty, and we need to be pursuing research that can generate information on agricultural investments that will make a difference. So we believe that we actually need to do to work together on that. What does that actually look like? It looks, going back to Bangladesh. We saw the example of smallholder household ponds, household vegetable gardens, livestock this morning. We're working just now in Bangladesh to look at the ways to which these sorts of investments can improve income and nutrition, and doing that in a way that doesn't just produce more food, more income for the household as an amorphous group, but what impact does it have on the different members of that household? And by pursuing an approach that does engage with the power issue, we are seeing that those benefits are actually being spread much more equitably across the household. They're having much more impact on women and children in particular than has historically been the case. And we are also seeing changes in the attitudes, the responses of both men and women in these households, which, again, early days, but we are seeing men be more accepting of women's engagement in these activities, and a more balanced sharing of food within the household, and we're seeing women expressing a much greater sense of dignity and power within the household. So positive indicators, but still very early days.
Thanks, Mark. Back to you in a bit. Peter this morning said he's not losing any sleep over any of this. Alessandra, what keeps you awake at night?
Well, let me take that question back. I don't think I want to know what keeps you awake at night. What's the most exciting thing that you've been involved in the last 6 months in the livestock and fish program?
Okay, thank you, Rajita. Thank you for changing the question. So, there have been a number of things. I joined the field 6 months ago, and there have been a number of things that have been exciting. And I can mention one has been a project in Tanzania, which is part of the livestock and fish value chain. It's a project that started 2 years ago together with our partners, and the idea is to introduce dairy, goats, and group crops in 4 pastoralist communities in the area of Morogoro. The aim was to enhance livelihoods and improve nutrition. Last summer, we did the fieldwork with the gender analysis, and we realized that the introduction of dairy goats had actually affected the gender division of labor, which means that because the goats are kept in both houses in the household, in the courtyard, while the men take out the rest of the livestock for grazing outside of the village, the women are the ones that stay at home and they look after the goats. Also the children, both boys and girls, when they come back from school, they're actually the ones in charge of looking for grass. So while actually women and the children are involved in managing the goats, it seems that the men are still the ones who are in charge of the decision making for the revenues that are generated through the sale of the milk and the goats themselves. So there was also another very interesting finding. There was the fact that both the women and the men farmers considered the gender sensitization training that our partners undertook to be very positive. They said, well, after those trainings, actually, we became more aware of the contribution that each household member is giving to the household work. And it also opened a dialogue about organizing our daily farm work. So we took these findings and we started developing a concept note for a participatory development of an empowerment conceptual framework and impact pathway. And it has been submitted for phase 2. And we did the same, developed the same concept note also for the value chain in Ethiopia and Uganda with the idea of comparing findings. And what is also exciting is that this approach can be scaled out to other livestock technology interventions.
Thank you. That's great. You mentioned training, and I'll pick up on that. And if you look at all those gender posters outside, most of them, if you look at the challenges that they articulate, it's a lot about capacity, you know, the gender and social science research capacity, and Patty mentioned it this morning, how that's really critical and how it's very weak amongst in the PG and amongst our partners. Kathy, I see one of the important pieces of your livestock and fish gender strategy is capacity. And these gone through gender training. We've done gender training time and time and everybody has gone through one. So don't see anything changing. I mean, what are you doing? Going to do this
differently? Excellent. And this thing is on. Every single CD center is creating or have created a gender strategy to both support, enhance, their research. And the gender strategy for livestock and fish contains four key priorities. The very first one, which is very dear to my heart, is around capacity development. And the thing that is different about this is that we are not only engaging partners, both development as well as research, but we are also creating tools and approaches that are going to be very different than what has been done previously. We're creating an assessment tool right now that will be working with our partners to help to identify what their needs are and how can we begin to create and tailor our programs and our projects and the tools and approaches that we use to address their needs. Because I think we've heard over and over again this morning, it's about partners. We have to be able to work better with partners. So that's one of the areas that we're really focusing on. Just recently, we did our annual gender working group meeting for our livestock and fish working group, which includes not only our research partners, but our development partners as well. And we asked each one of our gender scientists from the different value chain countries we're working in to bring two key partners with them, either a research partner or a development partner or both. And in every situation that we had, the people came, they shared the work that they are doing in addition to us sharing the research that we are doing. And then we had the opportunity to exchange and learn from each other in a tool-sharing workshop where they brought in their tools, we brought in our tools, we compared tools, and we talked about how can we actually use these tools to improve our work and our impact on gender research. And we ended by making different various commitments, and we're actually going to continue to expand that network. One of the other things that we have done, and I'm very excited about this, is working across the CD centers. We have identified different opportunities in both research as well as training as well as proposals to work together. And we are actually working very, very closely with all the gender scientists in the other CG centers. And I think that's really going to make a difference. So we're excited about that.
Right. Kathy, you've been in the gender business quite long. Maybe not in the CGIAR, but you've been around.
Yeah.
And if you look at the history of investments in gender in research and development, at a lower level, they go up it. So why do you think this attention that's being paid now is not just a blip, but it's the same, and it's going to be different this time around?
Exactly. I think it's time. I think everybody who's in this room who understands the importance of gender, and particularly those of us who have been involved in it for more than a few years, we really recognize that it's kind of a convergence, finally, of people understanding the need for research development, understanding the need for biophysical sciences as well as social sciences and how do they come together. So I think that's going to be one of the differences. The CRPs also are bringing people together in a different way, which is really exciting. I'm very excited about the interdisciplinary research that's taking place. We are working across different CRPs. We're helping to not only strengthen other people's gender expertise and gender research, but we're collaborating together on proposals. We're collaborating together on tools, on publications, on approaches. We've never done that before. We're also working together, I think Jackie mentioned earlier, the CG Gender Network has been a tremendous boon to those of us who are doing gender research in the CGs. We talk to each other, we share our tools, we share our approaches. We work together to mentor young scientists, which is very, very key. If you look around the room, you'll see we don't have a lot of young people. They're involved in gender research. This is a serious issue. And so we are very interested in figuring out ways to track young, not just young women, but young men. How can we do this to engage people more actively? So we really see the CG Gender Network working across the CRPs and finding ways to collaborate not only within the CGs, but across the development partners that we're now actively working with to actually make a difference.
Thanks, Beth. She just meant young in age. She didn't mean young at heart. You know, you're all very young at heart. Patrick, you'll have the last word. What are the two top things that the CRPs can do in the next 2 to 3 years to position themselves well to respond to the second call for proposals, CRPs, which are gender responsive?
I think the first thing I would say is get the partnerships right and make sure that we actually position ourselves properly with regard to our development partners in particular so that we can actually deal with the challenge or the perception that the CG is engaging in development rather than research for development. The second thing is that as we do that, we need to be generating the evidence through the work that we're doing on gender over the course of the next couple of years that actually can show that the steps that we're taking, we don't want to have final outcomes in many cases, but what we're actually looking for is a growing body of evidence that the steps that we're taking are actually the right steps, they are making a difference, in partnership with the development partners. The, if I can add in a third thing, the thing that I would also say is that I think we do need to make some tough choices as we go ahead. There's always going to be a limited amount of money. There are people drawing us right, left and centre to be working in this flagship region or that flagship region or wherever. And what tends to happen is that we spread geographically and then we say, well, we don't have enough money for gender, we don't have enough money for M&E or whatever. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is to actually ensure that these core issues, such as gender, such as M&E, are actually built in right throughout wherever we work. And if that means, in order to do that properly, we have to reduce the number of geographies that we actually engage with, then so be it. Reduce the number of flagships that we have, so be it. With the flagships we have, we've got to make absolutely sure that the right are working properly and that they are dealing with gender the way that we actually want them to be.
Thank you so much. So the message that we are hearing is that we need to get our investments, the quantity and the quality of investment right, which includes investment in the partnerships that we develop to implement our strategies and achieve the IDOs and SLOs. And there is a lot of excitement, there's a lot of new beginnings, there's a lot of building on what we have learned over the years and building capacities, etc. So great beginnings, long ways to go. It's got to be a bumpy road, but I think we are ready for it. Yep. Mm-hmm. We'll end on that note. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Yes, yes.
Thank you very much.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So,